discretion is advised.
Live from Glasgow, Scotland, it's time for the revolution in professional wrestling radio as Robert and Kenny prepare to take you inside the ropes.
Hello everyone and welcome to this Monday episode of Inside the Ropes. I'm Robert Duffin and I'm here with Sandra. Sandra, how are you?
I am doing pretty well. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay. But we must address the elephant in the room. And I hope he doesn't take offence at that. He's carrying some extra holiday weight. We've all been there. I'm not actually calling him an elephant. The elephant in the room, of course, is our dearly beloved Kenny McIntosh, who's not on the podcast with us this week, and he was not on our roundtable either. As any of you who follow his social media accounts know, that Kenny was quite ill over the last few days, and he had to go to hospital to seek some medical advice and treatment, which he has, and he's receiving that now, and he is getting better, and everyone should rest assured that the Mouth of the South himself will be back with Inside the Ropes and his other podcasts. At some point.
Hopefully, but mostly Inside the Ropes.
But mostly Inside the Ropes. The other podcasts.
Whatever.
But. Oh, gosh. I hope he's not listening to this now. And he's like, I don't laugh, Kenny, because, you know, you're supposed to stay all still in your little hospital bed and giggling away. But he's not had, like, abdominal surgery to anybody, so it's like, that sounds really grim. He's not allowed to laugh. It's not that.
He is allowed to move.
Yeah, he's not move, like. Yeah. It's not. I mean, it was serious enough for him to go to hospital, but it's not, you know. He's good, okay, people? He's good. We're trying to dance around this. He's good. He's going to be fine. Anyway, so, obviously, well wishes to Kenny, and hopefully he'll be back with us either later this week, or if not, if he wants to really milk this, maybe next week. But otherwise, I've got you, Sandra. And we always put on a good podcast, don't we? Apart from that
time. I think we do.
But there's no Undertaker. There's no dreams for us to destroy this week. So it's fine.
I was going to say, there's really nothing that super controversial that we're going to talk about, I don't think. So no need to rush home from the hospital to do an emergency podcast. No need for that kind of thing.
I would just imagine Kenny, like, flailing in his hospital bed, like, sending, you know, cups of water and grapes flying. Get me my mic! Someone get me a Skype connection. They've totally fucked it. No, it'll be fine. Everything will be fine. Although, are we going to alienate Eric Young fans worldwide today?
We might.
We might do that.
That might happen.
But I think Kenny will be okay with that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I don't have any complaints about that situation.
Anyway, if you want to get in touch with us here at Inside the Ropes, send us questions, suggestions, feedback. Just tell us, you know, that you love us, because some of us didn't get told that enough as children. You can go onto our facebook.com/theinsidenetwork, or simply search for Inside the Ropes. You can also get us on Twitter at @inside_theropes, @Bertie_ITR, that's BERTIE_ITR, or @SandraRuthRW. You can also go to insidetheropes.co.uk. That website is, you know, it's been inactive for a little while, because that's the website we mostly use to sell live event tickets and merchandise. But something tells me that within the next week or so, insidetheropes.co.uk might be a destination website for some people, Sandra, don't you think?
I think it might be something to check out.
It might be, but we can't say too much more about it. We're going to be coming back in a second to talk about the news. Obviously, we're going to be talking about the eight, the WWE eight. Will they be a hateful eight? I guess it depends on what those shoot interviews are going to be like. We're going to talk about the WWE 8, the superstars who were released this week from their contracts. Me and Soren are going to give you some thoughts on those releases, and we'll try and not slag anybody off too much, because no doubt one of them is going to be in the podcast next week and we'll look very silly for making fun of them.
Troubled times. There's never been a right time to say goodbye. But if I stay, she'll only see right through me. And then that look of shame inside my eyes. So I'd rather turn away, 'cause things you're gonna say will break her heart. Make her cry. There's never been a right time to say goodbye. To say goodbye.
So it broke towards the end of last week that eight WWE superstars were being released from their contracts. It seems to drip out dribs and drabs on Twitter and social media, letting us know who is going. And ultimately, the list stopped at, well, Wade Barrett, Bad News Barrett, King Barrett, pick your gimmick. Also, Damian Sandow, Santino Marella, Cameron, Hornswoggle, Alex Riley, El Torito, and Zeb Coulter. As of Friday 6th of May, as the old saying goes, WWE wish them the best in all of their future endeavours. Those future endeavours will probably be many, many podcast interviews, hopefully including Inside the Ropes at some point for some of them. Maybe a trip over to the UK to do the indie circuit over here. We love a good import. Well, some of us more than others. maybe some of them will find their way to the Impact Zone, or maybe the Temple? Who knows? We're going to go through them now and talk a little bit about where we see these people going. I'm going to save a particular person for the end, though. So we'll start off with a guy who, well, we sort of knew this was coming, because Wade Barrett, last year sometime, changed his Twitter to his real name, Stu Bennett. And he said that Stu Bennett was the actor who played Wade Barrett on television. He was not in the WrestleMania match, even though he was advertised as being so. He was kicked out of the League of Nations unceremoniously, and was generally telling anybody who would listen that he wasn't re-signing. And indeed, after this announcement, he did say that he decided last summer that he would not renew his deal and that he wanted to go on to different things. So, Sondra, we have in our, well, long-ish now history as broadcast partners on Inside the Ropes, we have differed in opinion at various stages of Wade Barrett's career, gimmick to gimmick. But how was your... How was your mood when you saw it finally confirmed that Wade Barrett would be leaving our screens? Because you were a supporter of his, I would say.
I am definitely a supporter of his. I love Wade Barrett. I think he's fantastic. And I really liked Bad News Barrett, where it's, you know, you might not have enjoyed Bad News Barrett quite as much as I did. But I don't know. I think he's a really talented performer. But when I read that he was part of this list, because I saw all eight at once, because I was asleep as things were sort of coming out as to who had been released and whatnot, so I got to see the whole list all at once, and seeing Wade Barrett on the list made a lot of sense to me, because we knew that he wasn't re-signing. I'm guessing his contract, I think it was meant to be up in June or something, and I realized the other day that June makes sense, because when did the Nexus debut and wreak havoc and all of that? It was June. Like, that's when those guys got their contracts, which is probably when Ryback's contract is ending also. I don't know why that just occurred to me. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. But I think, you know, good for him getting out of it early, because this way he can go and do whatever he wants to do a little earlier because he wasn't going to be re-signing anyway. So I think the conversation about Wade Barrett being underutilized pretty chronically throughout WWE. I mean, he was obviously at the, you know, near top of the card or whatever when he was leader of the Nexus before the Nexus kind of went down the tubes, which is when I started watching, was when it was already going down the tubes. But I don't know. I think he's really talented. I think he had some unfortunate injury stuff. I think it's unfortunate that they didn't do more with him, but at this point it was obvious that he wasn't re-signing, and I'm just glad that he gets out a month early because then he can go on to do whatever he wants to do.
Yeah, I think it seemed to me that he was very keen on acting. I know a lot of people have said that they expect him to be at Preston City Wrestling in the UK at some point this year because he is from that local area, so it would be a bit of a hometown return, I guess, appearance for him. And I'm not ruling out that he will do some UK wrestling appearances at some point, or could even be considered a hot commodity for either TNA or Lucha Underground. I mean, I know which one I'd rather see him in if he was going to go anywhere. That's Lucha Underground, folks, just in case you're wondering.
The one that we're actually going to watch.
Yeah, exactly. But I think this is a positive for him. So I kind of can't be too sad about it. I mean, I'm sad because I think that, you know, there was a point in time when it looked like he could have been a legitimate world champion. I think that the bad news gimmick was really getting over. You know, but, I mean, I was a bit kind of about it at first. I wasn't sure about the material. But once it seemed to become more of his thing and he became more comfortable with it, I thought it was very funny. And I'll never understand why they cut the legs out from under him by saddling him with the King gimmick, because, you know, those Bad News Barrett t-shirts were selling pretty well. I know a lot of people that bought them. I saw a lot of people wearing them. And then they made him King Barrett, you know, weeks after, and they just had to sort of cut this down. And I know that he had been injured a few times, and unfortunately at those key moments when it seemed like they were going to do something with him. And I guess he just really lacked a coherent identity, you know, for being there such a short period of time, he had so many theme songs, you know, multiple different gimmicks, allegiances, Nexus, Core, teaming up with Stardust, you know, teaming up with the League of Nations, and there's probably countless more that I've forgotten about. So I guess when a character becomes so hard to define, maybe it becomes hard to get behind him. But I think he's talented, and I've got no doubt that we'll see him somewhere else down the line. It might not be in wrestling, but we might see him in the movies or maybe some wrestling appearances in the UK or otherwise. I mean, I'd like to think he would be.
I hope we get to see him wrestle, because I think he's really, really good.
Yeah. I agree. But we'll see what happens. But moving on from Barrett, there's a guy who, when I saw his name, I'll be honest, I sort of thought that he'd gone already. And I don't mean that to insult him. I just haven't seen him on TV for what feels like forever. And I thought he'd left. Like, I feel like he'd retired. So maybe you'll be able to fill me in on something I've missed. But they released Santino Marella. But I thought
he did
gone.
Retire.
So I guess he was just under contract. And they were going to use him for comedy spots now and then, maybe.
Yeah, he was under contract still, which I didn't realize that he was still under, like, a contract either. But he did retire from in-ring competition after, I believe, it was a neck injury.
That's what I thought. And he sort of was focusing on his, was it Battle Arts? Is that his wrestling school?
I can't remember what it's called. You could very well be right.
I think it's
I know he has a school. He trains. And no, he'd retired from in-ring competition, so it makes sense to release him from a talent contract, right? Like, there's not that much that I have to say about Santino, I guess, just because we haven't been seeing him on TV. And I mean, he can still, even if he's released, like, if they want him to pop in or whatever, I guess they could do that. I don't really have any great need to see Santino on my television after what he did to Emma. But
Oh, God.
I still harbor resentment over that, Robert. I'm still not over it, and I'm glad that she's risen from the ashes like the glorious phoenix she is.
I will fondly remember the tea party with Sheamus, which is very funny.
That was funny.
The Honka meter back in 2009 always made me laugh, and let's not forget the two moments that a character like Santino rarely has. His almost Royal Rumble win in 2011, and then his almost World Heavyweight title win against Daniel Bryan in the Elimination Chamber 2012. Just two very unlikely situations for a comedy character to find himself in. And
would you say that Zack Ryder is sort of doing what Santino Marella did? Like, currently? Like, with his, I almost got this, or I was Intercontinental Champion for a second, and then...
I think they're different. I think they're quite different beasts, but... I see what you mean, but, like, Santino never really got there, and I don't know if, like, Ryder isn't as jokey a character as Santino.
Yeah, that's true. I was thinking more just, like, the underdog that's like, oh my gosh, I never expected you to be in this position, and you are, and now I really want you to win, even though that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, maybe. I guess the difference is that although people really enjoyed and believed for maybe a few minutes that Santino could do those things, when he didn't, nobody was like, oh, damn it, he's been buried and innocent, because... they knew deep down that ultimately he was never going to be there, but it was fun to dream. But I think with Ryder, because he's seen as slightly more legitimate in terms of his character, that maybe it stings more for fans. I know our David J. McCutcheon, I think, had his... You know, he really loved Zack Ryder winning the Intercontinental title at WrestleMania, and then it was a big letdown for him that he lost it the next night from memory. So, but yeah, Santino is out of the door. The next one, well... I don't think anyone's going to lose any sleep or lose any tears over this one. But Cameron, one half of the Funkadactyls, she wasn't really around after the Funkadactyls split up that much. She had that one terrible song about Monday Night Raw, probably more infamous as a meme for my favourite match of all time is Alicia Fox versus Melina. And she spoke to Stone Cold Steve Austin on Tough Enough, I believe.
Yeah.
Memories of Cameron?
Memories of Cameron. I am amazed that it took them this long to get rid of her, honestly. Because, like, as they had her on Total Divas for a while, and it seemed like that was really all she was doing, right? Because, like, part of the storyline was she went down to NXT to train and get better. She hasn't gotten that much better. And she hasn't been on Total Divas in a good while either, so... Yeah, I think it is interesting that I think it was just the day before the releases were announced, she wrote this big blog post defending herself for supporting Ryback and all of the stuff he's saying. And she had this really long blog post, which actually, I mean, it's worth a read. It's interesting. She talks about people bullying her online and like constantly bringing up the Melina Alicia Fox thing and trying to pin Naomi on her stomach and whatnot. She's like, I make mistakes. I'm human. And, you know, I'm trying to perfect my craft. And, you know, sorry, hun, you're not going to be doing that at the Performance Center anymore, it seems. I don't know. Cameron was just not very good. And I'm kind of surprised she was around as long as she was. And, you know, I don't want to say, like, I'm never happy to hear of anyone losing their job, but in terms of value she had to WWE, I just don't really see it.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither. Do WWE have an agenda against the smaller gentlemen? Because both Hornswoggle and El Torito have been let go. Hornswoggle put out a very nice message yesterday, basically saying, you know, he got to live a dream he never believed he would. He has no bitterment? No. Bitter feelings towards WWE whatsoever. El Torito, obviously, once the guys got repackaged as this, well, who knows what the hell they are yet. We're still getting these.
Come visit Puerto Rico, where we're not.
I don't know how that works in the ring. I mean, I don't even know what they're gonna. Are people even anticipating this debut? I got no idea what those guys. No one is. What are they?
I'm just amazed that this is a gimmick. Frankly, like, come visit Puerto Rico, which it's not like they're bringing Puerto Rico to the ring.
Wouldn't it be really funny? Wouldn't it be really funny if it turned out that we thought these were introductory vignettes for new characters, but it turned out that, like, the Puerto Rican tourist board...
I would love that.
...had just, like, plowed some money into sponsorship of the network or Raw or something, and these were genuine adverts made by WWE telling people to go to Puerto Rico. I would like that. But yes, Hornswoggle and El Torito gone. I mean, Hornswoggle and El Torito, they were... I mean, I guess we did have that WLC match to look back on.
Yeah, and that was a lot of fun.
And it was, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And Hornswoggle was around for a long time, part of some, you know, for the right or wrong reasons, very memorable storylines. But, I mean, El Torito was making his way in the wrestling world before this WWE stint. No issue for him. And Hornswoggle, you know, he seems ready to take on the next journey, so that's pretty good. Another guy on his way out who we've not seen since his, similar to El Torito, since his partner in gimmick decided to switch allegiances, is Zeb Colter, who obviously is a Dutch Mantel, who I figured they would keep around for a long time just because he's a solid hand, a solid mind, but maybe they're not so interested so much. He came back as Zeb Colter to back up Jack Swagger back in 2013 during that, could have been something sort of tea party gimmick that started to gain a lot of heat, and then they shat out of it a little bit when, they started to get invited on TV, and I guess they wanted them to be in character and maybe try and do something quite subversive, but WWE really backed away from being associated with it because maybe it's down to Vince's politics, I'm not really sure. And then Zeb had, he had the Real Americans, which was quite fun, and then he disappeared, and then he came back as Alberto's manager, which never felt right.
Made no sense whatsoever.
The Mix America thing was just an absolute, talk about dead on arrival.
It's the least likely pairing for a reason, because it doesn't make any sense.
And I feel like that was the start of Alberto's sad eyes, when he just looked like he was wanting to be anywhere but here. And it was definitely paired with him to be brought back. I don't even think I thought about this at the time, but just the idea that they thought, we're bringing back Alberto Del Rio, former World Heavyweight and WWE Champion, fairly established, if not beloved, really, performer. Oh, we better put him with someone just in case, he doesn't... I mean, people know who he is.
Know who he is, and he had been on his own some. Granted, they had him with Ricardo when he came in for, a long time. He was with Ricardo, but he doesn't really need a manager. He's good enough at speaking on his own.
I did. I still love the first sort of 8 months of his gimmick when he was smug and smiley and winky, which he doesn't really do as much anymore.
No.
You can't have a guy batter on for 8 months about how he's destined to be champion and then have him lose at the big one. I forgot all about this, but when they paired him with Zeb Colter, I actually thought that this would be, maybe just for fun, for WrestleMania this year, they could have made it like a parody of Randy Savage and Elizabeth, and then Randy Savage got together with Sensational Sherry. And then at WrestleMania 7, when Randy Macho Man Savage lost his match, Sensational Sherry turned on him and started beating him up, and then Miss Elizabeth jumped the barrier and came and beat her up. And I remember laughing to myself thinking, it'd be so funny if they remade it where, Zeb Colter starts putting the boots to Alberto after he loses his match, and then Ricardo Rodriguez
comes out.
Yeah, he jumps out of the crowd wearing Miss Elizabeth's big sparkly jumper. And,
that would be amazing.
And then attacks Zeb Colter. Imagine they'd done that. That would have been so funny. I meant to make a note of this months ago because I thought it was really funny, and now it's just come back to me. But I'm glad it has. I'm sure people listening will get a giggle out of imagining that situation.
Anyone with Photoshop skills, please make that happen.
Yeah, please. Please do make it happen. The next person is someone who we'll talk about a little bit later on, and we're probably going to give him some shit then, but Alex Riley, the Rage.
Rage and Riley. My gosh.
Released, and I gotta say, like you said, I don't really like to gain any happiness or joy from someone being released, but I really didn't like Alex Riley that much.
No.
It's really annoying. No, the only thing I liked about him was Kevin Owens picking on him.
I know. I mean, as enjoyable as it was for Kevin Owens to pick on him and just beat the crap out of him, no. Alex Riley, what even is Alex Riley trying to do? We'll talk about it when we get to NXT. But this whole Rage thing, I don't even know what Alex Riley was supposed to be. And he was on commentary for a long time and then started tweeting about how he was in a cage. Commentary is not a cage, dude. It's a job that you're doing and getting paid to do. And then he got all ragey and now his hair is terrible. And
oh, it's so bad.
It's so bad. No. He's a perfectly competent professional wrestler, but he's not anything special. He's not going to stand out. And just no.
Yeah. And you know me, I don't like to bring up times that I'm correct about things. Very rarely.
Rarely. You never. You hate to bask in your own glory.
Yes, but I remember back in 2011 when Alex Riley and The Miz split up, okay? And they had their pay-per-view match. And on the build to this pay-per-view, capital punishment, but I'm not sure. Something I read about that time. The crowd would go nuts whenever Riley would hit the ring, and people were like, oh my god, how over is Alex Riley? Like, he's so amazing. And I thought, and I said at the time, and I don't think people agreed with me, I said, I don't think Alex Riley is that over. I think The Miz is just really, really good at being a heel. Like, he's really over as a heel. It's not that they like Riley, it's that they like anybody that's trying to take out The Miz. And people were like, no, not true. And then after that storyline, what happened? Alex Riley floundered, disappeared, dropped off the face of the earth. And unfortunately, I'm sort of proving myself right by moving on to our eighth and final person to be released, because I thought the exact same thing when Damian Sandow became Damian Mizdow. And I did wonder, you know, is this guy really that popular, or is he only popular because he's trying to take down The Miz, who everybody hates? And I think it's safe to say that Damian Sandow was genuinely over.
Yes.
And he was in a better position than Alex Riley, in that I knew that once Alex Riley finished with The Miz, he was dead. Dead in the water. But I thought that once Sandow was finished with The Miz, if handled correctly, he could have been bumped up the card and become quite a big deal. And they horribly botched it. And this was the one that I sort of thought, ugh, that sucks. Because I feel like they're leaving money on the table. They are handing a gift. In releasing Damien Sandow, they are handing a gift to whichever promotion he sticks his flag in, or whoever books him if he tours as an independent talent, because he is funny, he's likable, he's good in the ring, he's quite inventive in his physical comedy, and I think that they dropped the ball with not having him win that Andre Memorial Battle Royal last year. Although some people, including Kenny, did find a way and a reasonable argument to justify the Big Show winning it. He didn't come back the next year to defend it, really. He never even mentioned. They didn't make much of a big deal of the fact that the Big Show was defending it. Did they really?
No, not really.
Not really.
Not really.
So
they made more a big deal of Antonio Cesaro defending it, like when he, you know, came up behind the Big Show again to try to body slam him or whatever. There was a lot more continuity between years one and two than two and three, I would say.
So I just think that it would have been better for him to win. But I am going to do one thing, because there are a few long-running jokes on Inside the Ropes. There's Bork Laser and his fighting moves of doom, and various other ones that have been lost to the sands of time. But for the very last time, because we'll probably not get a chance to talk about him again in relation to WWE, so I'm just going to have to do this one more time, Sandra, if you'll indulge me. But Sandra, I thought that match with John Cena really made Damian Sandow.
Oh, it absolutely made Damian Sandow just to be in the ring with John Cena.
Oh, of course. Remember when everybody said, it doesn't matter that he was the only person that cashed in his Money in the Bank and lost at that point.
Other than John Cena.
It made him, which just goes to prove that the only people that can cash in and lose are established stars. You shouldn't really do it to the younger guys. It did not make him. And there you go. But that's the end of that joke, sadly. That match really made Damian Sandow. But yeah, your feelings on Sandow, because I know you're a big fan of his.
I am a very big fan of Damian Sandow, and I just don't understand how they're leaving this much money on the table with Damian Sandow, right? Like, Damian Sandow is one of those guys. Damian Sandow and Cody Rhodes, actually, are kind of similar to me in the way that, like, they can take anything that they're given and get it over and be great at what they're doing. And maybe that's their problem. Maybe they're just too good at doing shitty gimmicks, so they keep getting handed shitty gimmicks because they can make it work, right? What people don't talk about when they talk about Damian Sandow is Damian Mizdow didn't happen just sort of out of the blue because they wanted to pair him with The Miz. Damian Mizdow was just like an extension of his I dress up as random people gimmick, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and that's why it evolved into the Macho Mandow thing, which was horrendous. But like, Damian Sandow came out dressed as an interpretive dancer in, like, a flesh-colored leotard one time, and the crowd was getting behind him because he's just that relatable, and I don't know what it is exactly. I don't know what he's doing to get the crowd behind him this much. But it wasn't just his partnership with The Miz that got him over. Like, you were saying with Riley, yeah, absolutely. It was proximity to The Miz that got Alex Riley all of the adulation that he got, because he, you know, he did kind of drop off the radar afterward. But Damian Sandow hasn't. And I mean, as recently as this past week, Damian Sandow's getting great reactions whenever he comes out. And I guess they just couldn't think of a story or couldn't think of something for him. It kind of baffles me. It just seems like such a misstep. And I don't know if winning the Battle Royal would have done anything for him or not, because winning the Battle Royal doesn't really seem to matter all that much ultimately. But if they would have done something with him afterward, and if the thing with The Miz had gone down differently or whatever, I don't know. Like, I don't have any fantasy retro booking that would have solved the entire world or anything, right? Like, it wasn't to be. But I think it's super unfortunate that they didn't find something to do with him, because I think he's so, so good. It is interesting, actually. You were mentioning how Wade Barrett changed his Twitter name to Stu Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
And last week, I noticed that Damian Sandow switched his to Aaron, with Damian Sandow in parentheses. So I don't know if that means anything, but I was like, oh, this isn't a good sign. So I actually kind of, I don't know. I didn't see it coming, but I was like, oh, this, it seems like he knew, kind of, like, that the end might be near. But yeah, all that to say that I am a really big fan of Damian Sandow, and I hope that he does find work in another promotion. I would love to see him show up in the Temple. How awesome would that be? How awesome would that be? I think it would be just fantastic. And again, he can take any gimmick that he's given and get it over and do a really, really good job with it. So I guess, I mean, the sky's still kind of the limit for him. He can make a mint on the indies. He's definitely popular enough.
I agree. I think he'll be fine. You know, he'll be okay. But it is still kind of sad. Speaking of these kind of, well, it's not speaking of releases, but obviously a lot of people anticipated that Ryback and Adam Rose would possibly be on this list.
Yeah.
And we spoke a little bit about Ryback on the roundtable, which you can still hear if you subscribe to us on iTunes or check out the Podomatic page. And I encourage you to, because it's a good listen. But we haven't mentioned much about Adam Rose. Now, he was suspended on a wellness violation, and then he went on social media and said that he had been prescribed the medication that he was, you know, flagged for using. And he was, you know, keeping people up to date on waiting for doctor's notes and stuff. And then he published a doctor's note online. And, you know, I just don't really know what the situation is. I mean, it's kind of tricky. I just think that in these situations, like, even if you think you are correct, which he obviously thinks he is, and that there's been, like, admin errors and various other things causing problems, I just don't think going on social media is that bright an idea, because even if he does get exonerated from that wellness charge, you know, the bad feeling towards him from the company will be really high, which isn't fair, because that's not how it should be. You know, he should be free to expose them if he feels he's been treated unfairly, but WWE don't really have a great track record of, you know, eating humble pie and admitting that they're wrong when it comes to dealing with their talent. In fact, they very rarely, if ever, do it. Or, you know, yeah. Or they wait 20 years for the apology, and sometimes it's too late. So, I don't really know what you think about the Adam Rose thing. Like, are his days number two?
They might be. I don't know. I kind of have to wonder if he's in a similar situation to Ryback, in that, you know, Adam Rose creatively is not really getting to do a whole lot right now. I don't know. I mean, working for WWE is his dream. I know in his original post about the wellness policy thing, when he said, like, he was going to be updating with doctor's notes and whatnot, he said it had to do with not wanting, like, his family and friends to think that he had tested positive for something bad, and he was trying to, like, kind of defend his honor.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it might not be the smartest thing career-wise for him, but he was very upfront about that, too. He said,
he did say he didn't care.
May get me fired, and I don't care. And if you're in that place, like, if you don't care whether it's going to get you fired, and if speaking up for yourself is more important than retaining your employment, then, I mean, I'd say good for him. I mean, if it's something he felt he had to do, and if you know, if he's not all that happy with WWE, which it doesn't sound like he is, because if you're happy with where you are and you're happy with your job, you don't release statements like this, right? So, I don't know. I'd say good for him for speaking up if it's something he felt he had to do. I don't think it's going to get him any favorable looks from the office.
I don't think so. I think him and Ryback could be following these other eight guys.
I think it brings up interesting things about the wellness policy, though, because, I mean, if he tested positive for Adderall, and that's something that was legally prescribed by a psychiatrist, no less, not just by, like, a family doctor or whatever, it's interesting. It's interesting how their wellness policy works, and that might be part of his thing, right? Like, exposing, like, hey, some of these standards are kind of bullshit because I'm testing positive for something legally prescribed that I'm not abusing, and I have to wonder how many other people are on things that are maybe not being tested.
Well, you do have to ask the question.
It's a strange one. To start a discussion. I don't know, but.
And I also, I mean, when I bring up this name, usually involves a bit of a rant, bro. I don't know why I don't want to bring him up, bro. It's Vince Russo, actually, with something that, well, this is one of the ones I agree with, to be honest. TMZ, I believe it was TMZ, if not one of those type of lecherous outlets, managed to catch a video with Stephanie McMahon. Shane McMahon's my next news nugget. Stephanie McMahon, and they asked her if China would go into the Hall of Fame. And she said, sure, China will go into the Hall of Fame when, you know, the time is right or the year is right, blah, 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 blah. And Russo called them out and just said that pretty much what we all thought a few weeks ago when China sadly passed away was that, you know, it went from no to sure because she died. You know, obviously there's a Triple H Steve Austin podcast where Triple H says no, you know, he says it's not going to happen because of the Googling. The kids will Google. And
well, he said he wasn't sure. He said it was tricky. He didn't say it would. He didn't say it wouldn't.
But now Stephanie's on camera saying, it's, you know, sure, yeah, it'll happen. And Vince Russo was the first one to come out and be very sort of upset about it. And it kind of, not isn't really about him. It's just the fact that it's triggered another wave of sort of criticism leveled towards the company. And it's just such a tricky situation. But I guess if you want to believe bad of Triple H and Stephanie, then these are bullets to put in your gun. I just think it is, like, regardless of, you know, what Triple H said or what Stephanie said, I mean, the fact is that I think, this is just me, that if she had lived to 80, I would have been surprised if she'd gone in, to be honest. And just the fact that she's almost a dead cert now for going in, so apologies for the expression, for going into the Hall of Fame, just leaves a really sour taste in my mouth, and it'll just be one in a long line of people that they induct into the Hall of Fame that just sort of don't feel all that comfortable watching them do it, because I'm not entirely sure it's been done the way that it could have been or the way that the talent would want it to be. It's just becoming, it's something that feels like it's happening all too often now.
Yeah, it does. It is really tricky, isn't it? Because her induction will never be what it should have been. But at the same time, I do want to see her go into the Hall of Fame because it's what she wanted. And she was very public about that, about how she felt she deserved to be in the Hall of Fame and how she appreciated fans who thought the same and let her know that on social media and whatnot. So I think, will it come across as kind of hypocritical when they do induct her, which I have to guess would be soon, given all of the media attention and whatnot? Yeah, it'll come across as pretty hypocritical, but I think there's just no good solution, because the good solution would have been to meet with her and try to, you know, redevelop a relationship there and maybe eventually induct her while she was alive, and we'll never get that chance. And that's super unfortunate. But I think the best thing is still to induct her because it is what she wanted and she absolutely deserves it. So it's never going to be what it should have been. It's just unfortunate, right? Because a lot of her substance abuse problems and whatnot were, you know, they were fairly public, and it could have gone this way with a lot more stars. Like if Jake Roberts had not gotten clean and whatnot and hadn't developed that relationship back with them, like, we could have been having this conversation about him too, right? I mean, not the same conversation, obviously, because China is different, but I think it is really unfortunate that she had to die to make it a certainty, and that sucks. That sucks hardcore. And there's no good solution, I guess. So I would like to see her inducted, but it's not going to feel as celebratory as it should.
Mm. And another thing that was announced in the past week that we didn't have a chance to talk about was this Shane McMahon podcast on the WWE Network. It's strange because they keep calling these things podcasts, but they're visual, and that's not really what a podcast is, but whatever.
Yeah.
And it was announced that there was going to be this tell-all. I don't know what that means. What's he going to be asked exactly? Tell-all podcast with Shane McMahon. And the host was going to be Mick Foley. And everyone was like, what? Like, why is it not Steve Austin? Not quite as much vitriol for Foley as there was for Jericho when he got his shot.
Well, they've, you know, likely listened to Jericho's podcast.
Yeah, rightly so. But there has been some news come out, actually, about why this has happened. And it's actually, you know, one that you can't really argue with. It turns out that Steve Austin is not doing this podcast with Shane McMahon because he can't travel at the moment because he had rotator cuff surgery. And he is in a sling or possibly like a cast or something.
I think it's a sling.
Right.
It's to reduce mobility, yeah.
Yeah, reduce mobility. And so apparently this all came into the, before the WrestleMania 32 segment with Steve Austin, Mick Foley, and Shawn Michaels, Steve Austin had like a slight tear in his shoulder that he was just sort of, you know, not anything worth worrying, well, not worth worrying about, nothing pressing that needs to be dealt with. And apparently, like, on the first punch that he landed on Rusev, he completely tore his rotator cuff.
Yeah.
Which I think is, you know, oh, I talk about, like, a serious injury for not such a serious segment, but I guess the reason I wanted to bring it up is I think it just really puts into perspective quite how fragile some performers are when they get a little bit older, and that maybe this is the reason why, you know, we don't have, you know, Steve Austin coming out of retirement. You know, every year it's like, is Austin going to come out of retirement and wrestle someone at WrestleMania? Will he wrestle Brock Lesnar? You know, a couple of years ago, will he wrestle CM Punk? And people just never seem to let this go. And then I saw this and I just thought, well, there you go, guys. You know, you get older. You spent, you know, a good portion of the early part of your life, you know, severe wear and tear from the wrestling career. And I don't know if many people have come out of wrestling with as much wear and tear as someone like Steve Austin has. Probably just Mick Foley as well. It would be a good example.
Yeah.
And there you go. You know, he threw one punch and a slight tear became a torn rotator cuff. So maybe we should just all go over the whole Steve Austin one more match thing and just, you know, enjoy what he does do. You know, the rare appearances, podcasts, his unflailing honesty when it comes to the pay-per-view reviews, which I do enjoy.
Oh, those are fantastic. I think he had planned to get his shoulder fixed.
Oh, you would assume it was, yeah. You would assume it was a plan, but he also probably didn't
participate. Yeah, because I listened to the show where he was talking with Enzo and Cass about it.
Right.
And yeah, it sounded like something that he had planned to fix, and he didn't think that it was going to be an issue because he figured, you know, I'm just going to be giving a couple stunners and that'll be it. But, you know, then he had to actually punch someone. He, like, hit Rusev square in the face.
Huh.
Poor Alexander Rusev. That's why Rusev tweeted he would never listen to Stone Cold's podcast again.
Oh, Rusev. But coming up next, obviously, usually we would cut to a segment with Sandra about NXT, but it's not really so much of a cut as such because she's on the show for the full hour. But we're going to be back after this short musical break to discuss this past week's NXT. We'll be back right after this.
We're back, and we're going to talk about NXT now, my wheelhouse. It's exciting. The show is getting good again, too. At least I think it's getting good. But the main news coming out of NXT this past week, Eric Young showing up in the NXT zone. Everybody's making that joke, so I just figured I'd roll with it. But this is actually the first time I've seen Eric Young, other than brief TNA clips here and there, but I've never actually paid that much attention because I've seen like an episode of TNA. So yeah, Samoa Joe comes out in the ring, first time he's addressing the crowd after winning the title off Finn Balor at the live event, which is pretty cool. And Samoa Joe is great, and Samoa Joe is a guy who came from TNA, and for me, it took me a little while to get acclimated to Samoa Joe just because I didn't know him, right? Like, and Kenny and I were talking last week, sometimes I have an issue with people coming from other promotions and just being like, no, I am a big deal, I promise, and not showing their work on NXT, like not showing their work to people like me who haven't seen them before, right? So in comes Eric Young to tell me that he's a big deal without showing his work in NXT at all. What did you think of this, Robert? Because you are more familiar with Eric Young than I am.
I sat down to watch this earlier today, and I really wanted to be surprised. I've actually started to, not resent, but grow unimpressed with some of the guys that they've brought in. And they've just not really done much with it. Now, you see, the thing is, the knob jockeys over at The Brand have been accusing WWE for fucking up Raw by not establishing great characters in Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, right? And just relying on their indie crowd, which I think is an absolute load of hogswash, right? I think it's absolute drivel, bum gravy, call it whatever you want. It's asinine, okay? They were in NXT for a long time, and I think Sami and Kevin have very well established characters on the main roster, and I think that's why people are supporting them, or, you know, or not supporting them in the appropriate ways. Right. So, but with NXT, I thought about this when I saw the Dallas special and Austin Aries beat Baron Corbin, and I kind of was like, I kind of wanted Corbin to win. And then Aries had a promo on, this way he had a match as well, but he had a promo as well on the show, and I just kind of, well, we'll get to that a little bit, but I'm not really all that comfortable about the way that I think they are doing what Russo and co. are accusing them of doing on Raw, and that they're just kind of bringing these guys in, and they're assuming that because the NXT fan base is mostly, allegedly, hardcore wrestling fans, that they can just, these guys can just walk right in and become established
and
characters.
Be the biggest deal.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure that it's working for Aries, hence the promo that we'll talk about. And Samoa Joe, I think his NXT run has been transformative in that he has come in, he was brought in exactly in a similar way to these guys, as you know, this is a big deal, but he really has undergone a sort of late career renaissance, and I'm really happy that I got to see it, because Samoa Joe, you know, 06, 07, 08 was an incredible talent for TNA, and then just, you know, was like a, he's like one of those, you know, rehab dogs that you see on TV adverts, where it's like, you know, oh, little Joey was beaten up by his owner, and he was all shaky and scared and unloved, and then this nice family took him in, and suddenly he's running around, banging his bone, you know, playing with the kids.
Acting like a dog again.
Acting like a dog again, yeah. And I feel like Samoa Joe is acting like Samoa Joe again, and I'm really enjoying it, and I think, I feel like his NXT title is really deserved. Not that anybody that's had it already isn't, but there's just something really satisfying about seeing him have it for me, because I think it is, in a way, sort of confirmation, recognition that he did still have that in him, you know, to give the kind of matches and performances that he's had since he's been back. And it's only really been since the heel turn, but that's been a while now, and I've really enjoyed it. But Eric Young came out, and the crowd were, you know, programmed to go nuts for this kind of stuff, and his promo was fine, but it wasn't great.
I thought it was bad.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it was bad. Maybe I'm just being nice. And I just didn't really think that, you know, he just walked out like everybody just knew who he was. And I'm like, no, you maybe need to. I guess they sort of built it as this sort of someone from Joe's past. And, you know, the fact that Joe defeated him later in the night, spoilers, does make me wonder, as I think you said at some point, that, or maybe it was Kenny, that maybe he has only been brought in for one night just now. I don't know. Do we know if he is or isn't?
I don't know. Well, he's not signed a contract with them. So, and I don't think he has any more appearances that I know of. I don't read the spoilers, so yeah. Kenny told me, and I think Kenny told you on the show last week, that Eric Young was going to confront someone and then he was going to have a match with that person the next week, and I think we might have just seen all of that in one show.
So it
could just be like a James Storm situation.
Yeah, they just had someone someone from Joe's past for him to mow down.
Yeah.
Which is, if that's all it is, fine. You know, but it did make me worry about Bobby Roode, basically, because I think that Roode, like Joe, is one of those unloved dogs who really does have the potential to be something special. And I hope they don't just bring him in and have him just walk in and be like, hey guys,
I'm Bobby Roode.
I'm Bobby Roode, you know? And it's like, well, no, some people don't. And
yeah, like me, for instance.
Yeah, for example. So, I guess.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because this week it hit me especially, and it's something I've been thinking about for a little while. I almost prefer when they change their names.
Oh, wow.
And that's probably not going to be a popular opinion. And it doesn't hold true to Samoa Joe, because Samoa Joe, like I said, he came in and it took me, you know, a month or two to kind of get what Samoa Joe was all about. And I think it took him a month or two to kind of maybe shed the horrors of the abuse and whatnot, you know. But Samoa Joe has shown his work and become a great character in NXT. I'm way more interested in Samoa Joe as NXT champion than I ever was in Finn Balor as NXT champion. And that says something, right? But when they don't change their names, it's like, it almost seems like that's the crutch. Because Eric Young's like, I'm Eric Young. I'm coming out to this, I don't know, twangy music. And I have crazy eyes and look like maybe I was too manic to be in the Wyatt family. Like, I wasn't sitting still at cult meetings, so Bray kicked me out. Like, that's the impression I got from Eric Young. Like, he kind of wanted to be a Wyatt, maybe, but he wasn't good enough. And the Wyatt family involves Braun Strowman, so, you know, whatever. And he's a perfectly fine pro wrestler, but their match didn't light anything on fire for me either.
Nah.
It was a good wrestling match, but it wasn't a wrestling match where I was like, oh, okay. And, you know, I was interested to see this Eric Young person because apparently he's a big deal or something. Like, you'd think someone super, super important had shown up the way the crowd reacted. I don't know. He didn't really do it for me. And I thought his promo was bad, and he was overpronouncing everything, and it just wasn't my favorite. So, but I think, like, in terms of changing their names and everything, it gives them a chance to start over and to start showing their work, right? Like, if Finn Balor had come in as Fergal Devitt and they had just been like, no, I swear I'm Fergal Devitt, we might not have gotten some of this. And Finn Balor's still kind of working on finding his character, but at least he's working on it and becoming part of the universe, be it NXT, be it WWE, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Maybe for me, because same thing with Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, just haven't really connected with me that much either. Tommaso Ciampa more after I saw him versus Sami Zayn in Milwaukee, because they had this really awesome match and it was so good. But it just kind of seems like they're using their names and their indie cred as their entire character, and that's just not good enough for me, I guess. But
it was actually Tariq, as he had on our Facebook page, who asked, he said, I know you guys weren't too hot on Eric Young coming to NXT, but you have to admit he looked great against Joe in that main event. Transformative nature of NXT, or just bad booking on the part of TNA? I guess we have to agree to disagree on this one, Tariq. I mean, I will agree with you on the bad booking of TNA, but I'm not entirely sure that NXT was that transformative at all. I mean,
he looked like a very good, competent pro wrestler.
Yeah. Like, he was fine, but I just think that in terms of a transformative nature, Joe was an example of transformative nature, but if a TNA fan, if NXT was on, like, normal television, and they skipped onto the channel and, you know, managed to avoid and not notice all the branding, I'm not sure they would know that there wasn't, like, a rerun from, like, three or four years ago, with Eric Young and Samoa Joe. They might think, hey, Joe looks really good here. Is this from 2008? But I don't know if Young looked that different than... He's just never been a performer that connects with me. But, you know, I know that there are people that do like him, and I hope that if it is just a one-episode thing, that they were happy to see him and to see him do that, because that's cool, you know? But you were saying, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, we had Nia Jax beating Tessa Blanchard in, like, a minute or two or something. It wasn't long. What do you think of Nia Jax?
Well, I was actually thinking when I was watching it that I don't mind her, really. I think she seems pretty cool, and I sort of enjoyed the gimmick, but my thing was, is when you're a monster, which is what she's kind of billed as, you know, that's her character, she's this monster sort of bruiser, and she really needed to have won the NXT women's title already for her to have any currency, because they obviously were always wanting to put it on Asuka, which is fine with me. No issues with that. Can't wait for the next Bayley Asuka match. But when, you know, when your plucky underdog takes out the giant, where does she go after that? Because the commentary team were talking about it, like, oh, will other people be able to do what Bayley did? And it's like, okay, so remember the story of David versus Goliath? Well, you know, there wasn't any fucking follow-ups. You know, there wasn't any sequels. David versus Goliath 2. You know, once Goliath was slayed, that was pretty much it. And with Nia, I just wonder whether her character needs to change a little bit, because, you know, you can't really tell the story of her being the unstoppable force, because she has been stopped, and she was stopped by Bayley. So is she going to be another, like, do they have to keep her, you know, just simmering until there's someone with the NXT women's title that's not maybe as beloved a character as Bayley, that they can have her take the belt off it or something? Like, I think she could have a great Awesome Kong-esque run as the dominant female champ before someone defeats her. But
wouldn't it be better if she took it off someone like Bayley, though? Like, for her character?
Oh yeah, it would be, but she had that chance and Bayley overcame her first time, and I just think that, unlike other wrestling shows, NXT fans, you being prime evidence, do have long memories. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not really sure that she could be put in that position again, because, well, we've already seen the plucky underdog beat her, when the natural story is monster defeats underdog, underdog works back up to defeat monster. But they didn't do that, because they don't have that many. I mean, they might have done that if they had more specials, you know, if there was more takeovers. Maybe Bayley would have lost it and won it back before she went on to Asuka, but they didn't really have time to do it. So they just went with a straight-up win, which made Bayley look great, but I just wonder whether Nia Jax has lost some of her luster, and maybe she would be better. I kind of think she might be better still. I mean, are her and Eva Marie still a thing?
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind maybe if Eva Marie ever gets that belt, if Nia would be the one to sort of turn on her and take it off her, and maybe she'd become like a babyface monster. I'm not sure. But I don't know where it goes, but I just think that the natural story to tell with her was kind of undercut by that Bayley win. So I don't really know what they do with her. I think they have to be a bit more clever with her than just a straightforward, she's a beast. So,
see, that's interesting, because I've heard other people say that too, and I guess I just don't see it that way as much, because maybe it's my undying devotion to Bayley, but it seemed like that didn't really make Nia look that bad, because she got choked out, and she didn't just give up or whatever. But I think if you make her dominant and you kind of keep building and building,
you can rebuild her. Yeah,
like, you can rebuild her. I don't think one loss is something that takes, you know, the luster off someone that much. And I think it was more like Bayley's wrestling IQ, you know, like, she was smart and she had to pull everything out, right? Like, Bayley's not known as a submission specialist, even though she's really, really great at submissions, but it's just not the way she wrestles, and she kind of had to pull out new stuff to beat her. But it'll be interesting to see where Nia goes. I'm really excited for the eventual Nia versus Asuka match that they seem to kind of be building to, so we'll see how that goes, and I think maybe that'll tell us whether Nia is going to be dominant again, or, you know, if she just straight up loses to Asuka, then maybe you're right and there's something to what you say, because,
which I think she will. I just don't,
yeah,
I think she will. I think Bayley might become the first two-time champ, but we'll see. I guess we'll see what happens, but
I really, really hope that she does. But after that, we got Ty Dillinger versus Austin Aries. We talked a little bit about this. Now, I don't know if it's just me and being blinded by love of the Perfect 10, but I thought Ty Dillinger was better in this match than Austin Aries was.
Again, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this, because I was a big supporter of Austin Aries when he was in TNA in 2012, and I do like him. But again, you know, I'm watching another Austin Aries match, and I kind of want the other guy to win, because just think he's more entertaining and really kind of like him. I think Ty Dillinger's pretty cool, and I really enjoyed him when I saw the NXT show in Glasgow. Like, he did a very sort of carny match with Bill Dempsey that wasn't really based on wrestling. It was all kind of, you know, pratfalls and playing with the 10 sign and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It was really entertaining, like very, very entertaining. And yeah, I mean, we'll talk about Austin Aries' promo in a minute, so I'm just going to, which kind of feeds into his whole thing where, you know, he even admits himself that he's not maybe doing so well in NXT and maybe he needs to put the, you know, maybe to reverse a little bit back up and try something else. But I wanted to say something about Ty Dillinger because he's one of these guys. Every time I see him, I always like, I really like this guy. Like, I really like the gimmick. And then I realized that, you know, oh God, main roster. Oh. But I actually want to put a positive spin on it because hear me out. I want to try and maybe I can do this, folks. Maybe I can convince Sondra that there's a guy that she loves and that I'm growing to love as well, that they could go to the main roster and not flounder. And it's based on this idea, okay. So Bo Dallas, Tyler Breeze, and Adam Rose were NXT guys who all went to the main roster and kind of sucked. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, they didn't suck, but they had the life sucked out of them. And you would probably assume that Ty Dillinger would go the same way. And I realized one of the things that might be in his favor is that those guys are characters. Like, those guys are all performing characters. Ty Dillinger has a gimmick. And I think that might actually stand him in quite good stead because, like, the Perfect 10 is a variation on a pretty solid wrestling gimmick. You know, it's a Mr. Perfect or even a I Am Perfection era Dolph Ziggler. It is someone who just thinks that they are the best. And that's not really a sort of character-based thing. And, you know, in the way that Bray Wyatt is a character, you know, there's a guy acting in this part. Same thing with Bo Dallas when he was doing the inspirational thing. And I think the same thing for Tyler Breeze and Adam Rose. They're playing quite extrovert characters. And those types of gimmicks, well, those types of characters, sorry, seem to come to the main roster. And they don't really know what to do with them. They don't really know how to reintroduce them. They're just going to get put there. But Dillinger is like a really good guy in the ring. But the Perfect 10 thing, like his entrance, I love the entrance. I love the sort of the hype up with the crowd when he's in the ring and he builds up to pulling out the 10 thing. He does the fast 10 fingers at the crowd. And I think it's really cool and it's really exciting. I think that's something that gets over very quickly. You know, you don't really need to do a lot of establishing with that because he's not really, it's not a character thing. It's not like a character from a movie. You know, like any of those other guys I mentioned, you feel it could be in like a TV show, like a normal TV show, because they're very character-based. And he might not suffer that. And I actually think that maybe, if he's, I mean, it's still all about being given a chance. I mean, I don't mean put him in the main roster now, he's going to do great, but it's something that an audience can really click onto very quickly, and that's either as a heel or a babyface. So, yeah, I just want to kind of express my love for Ty Dillinger and the hope that maybe when the time comes, if the time comes for him to go to the main roster, that the fact that his is more of a gimmick than a character might stand him in good stead. Maybe.
I like that way of looking at things. I really do. And I think Ty Dillinger is just so good, right? Like,
oh, he's lots
he's
of fun,
just
yeah.
so good. And he's a great wrestler, too. His finishing move is kind of stupid. It's like, I hit you with my knee and whatever. But I don't know. I've really liked him for a long time. Even since before the Perfect 10, I've always liked Ty Dillinger. I like Ty Dillinger better than I liked Jason Jordan when they were tag teaming together. So, yeah. Like, Ty Dillinger I thought was just great in this match. And Austin Aries was good. Again, he was perfectly fine. But, you know, we can talk about his promo, too, where he says, you know, I've been flying under the radar or something. And, but what have you done to prove yourself to not kind of fly into the... I mean, you beat Baron Corbin, which was good in your debut. But not that much has even happened since then. So it seems very strange for him to be complaining about his spot in NXT when, like, what have you done, really?
Yeah.
Show your work. Like, don't just be like, I'm Austin Aries. I'm the... Like, Austin Aries is a total heel to me right now.
Maybe that's the way he's going.
And it seems like he kind of is. I mean, the greatest man who ever lived, that's a heel thing to say. Right?
Yeah, very much so.
So, heel Austin Aries could be good. And again, like, it's not like I'm ragging on Austin Aries and saying, I hate him, get him out of NXT. It's just, I want to see more from him, I guess, before I'm ready to be like, oh, Austin Aries is the greatest man who ever lived. But we had the Revival versus the Hype Bros on this show, too. And the Revival continues to just be awesome, and the hype bros continue to not be so awesome.
I really felt bad for Zack Ryder when they were doing the, you know, he just won the title at WrestleMania a month ago, and now he's back here. That shows his commitment to his partner, and I was like, oh, it shows the lack of commitment to his booking.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But it is what it is, and Zack Ryder at least is getting to do some more stuff on Raw lately, and SmackDown, and Main Event, and he's actually been on the shows, which is good. I think, just Mojo Rawley just needs to go, frankly. Just needs to go. But the Revival's great, and the Revival, I'm giving up and calling them the Revival, I guess. But the Revival has this thing now where they're like, nope, we lost the belts and we are super pissed about it. So we are just going to like beat up everybody constantly and be really, really dominant. And I love it. And I think they're great still. So yeah, I'm still a big fan. And then we get Andrea with Alex Riley, who's raging.
Yeah. And saying he didn't know what strong style even means. Cause he's
I
got
don't
a
even
match.
Know what that means.
He's got a match next week with Shinsuke Nakamura. Safe to say that he'll be strong styles right out of existence next week on NXT. I got a funny feeling he's not getting that win.
From Rage to Release.
Rage to Release. But, I mean, we've already talked about the main event. But maybe to conclude, unless I've forgotten something, is the teaser promo for Finn Balor's return, which seems to me that they're suggesting that, you know, I mean, I could be wrong, but it felt like a sort of indirect way of saying, you know, maybe he's losing control of the definition between Finn Balor and the Demon. Is that the vibe you got from it? Like, is he going to come back?
I'm not sure, because
as Demon, like, all the time or something? Like, is the Samoa Joe?
I doubt it. What I'm wondering is if it's, and this is something I meant to bring up when Samoa Joe first beat Finn Balor for the title, because I saw it said online and I thought it was really, really smart. Samoa Joe didn't pin the Demon.
Mm.
Samoa Joe pinned Finn Balor. He pinned Finzi, right?
Yeah.
So that's just another smart thing about doing it at the house show, is they've kind of protected the mystique of the Demon. I don't know how things are going to go when Samoa Joe battles the Demon, because I assume that rematch is at TakeOver.
When is the next TakeOver?
June 8th.
Oh, it's not that far away.
No, it's not. I will be in Metropolis, Illinois. I'm going to leave my house on time, and I'm going to make sure to get to my hotel by 8, because I'm driving all day that day. So,
is this just a TakeOver? Has TakeOver got a name? Has it got a subtitle yet?
I don't know.
Because it's in Florida, right? It's not going to another
state. It's in Florida, yeah. I don't want to Google it, because I'm so afraid that if I look it up, that I'm going to be spoiled on something.
Yeah, probably.
You know? So I've been avoiding all news of it, but I know that it's June 8. But I don't know. What do you think about that? Like, if the Demon Finn Balor gets pinned by Samoa Joe, that seems almost bigger than Finn Balor.
Yeah, I think it's a way. It's a way to get one more match out of this feud. And I'm cool with seeing these guys wrestle again, because I love watching them wrestle. But if it was just I want my rematch, okay. But if they hype it as him saying, you know, you couldn't beat the Demon, you fought me as Balor and you beat me, you know, good for you. But when I unleash the Demon, when I put that body paint back on,
yeah,
I bet you can't beat me again. And that will, you know, really rile up Joe's competitive spirit. I mean, we're fantasy booking, but that's how I think that's how you get another intriguing match out of it. You know, they could just book another match and people will be like, well, this will be good. But if you want intrigue, if you want because almost, you know, equal importance to the title is the sort of significance of that body paint. Because I don't know, has he ever lost painted?
No.
So that's a biggie. You know, that's a real, real big one. And I don't know if the title goes back on him, but it doesn't seem likely. But you never know. It depends how long he's going to be there. I mean, I don't want to say this for sure because I could get this thrown back in my face, but I think all those people that were hoping for Gallows and Anderson to be part of the Balor Club, I think they're going to have to wait a lot longer for that to happen. I get the feeling that it might be Balor Club, and maybe Finn Balor, you know, edges out AJ Styles, and that's a feud, but I don't think it's happening anytime soon. And, you know, people were thinking it was going to be happening, and it was happening imminently, but I don't think it is. So maybe Balor's going to be in NXT for a while longer. Maybe he will recapture the title. But I tell you, if they want to really, you know, big up Joe, he could be the guy that, you know, beat the Demon. That would be something to something to say he did, something to say you've seen, and I'd certainly tune into the network to watch that fight if that was the stipulation.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. I think it's a really, really cool, smart way to build intrigue, like you say. It makes me more interested. So, yeah, I guess we'll see where that goes. But I think to close out, just give me your thoughts on No Way Jose.
Oh, right. So, okay. I hadn't seen this guy yet. I didn't see the debut match, but I'd seen the vignette-y thing. I didn't know what he looked like or anything. So the music hit, and he didn't even get to the ring before I paused on my iPad, and I grabbed it, and I went to see my sister, who's really into wrestling. And I was like, just stop what you're doing. I need to show you this. Rewind back 30 seconds. Short of the entrance, and we both watched the entrance and the match, and I thought he was very, very entertaining. And in a week that we lose a guy like Santino and Hornswoggle and El Torito and, you know, Damian Sandow, there's a lot to be said for wrestlers who do comedy. And his actual match was a bit sketchy. Like, it wasn't that smooth. Some of his moves looked like they could, you know, I feel like he needs a bit more time to hone his in-ring skills. But, you know, people have said, you know, oh, it's Adam Rose crossed with Fandango. And I always thought that my issue with Fandango was I never really believed that he was that committed to the gimmick. He always looked like he didn't really seem to be enjoying himself that much. And that cannot be said about No Way Jose. In fact, he even works, which is what I always thought about Fandango, was that he didn't work the dance gimmick into his offense.
Right. And No Way Jose does perfectly.
Yeah, he really does. He works the, you know, the shimmying and the moving around into the offense, and I kind of like it. And this is just what I mean. I don't know. This could go either way. I was a big fan of Adam Rose when he first came out, because I like the entrance and I like the music, and it made me laugh. And so I don't want to, you know, throw all my eggs in the No Way Jose basket, because I could get, you know, those eggs put in my face if it all goes wrong. But when the match finished, I turned to my sister and I said, you know what I'm thinking. And she looked at me and she went, you want to see No Way Jose meet the New Day? And I went, yes, I do. So it must have been some sibling synergy, Unagi or something. But I just saw this guy and I went, oh my God. Like, even, I don't care, a backstage segment, a one-off segment on Raw. I mean, if that's all the No Way Jose gimmick gives us, I think a segment with the New Day would be really funny.
Oh, I think that could be glorious.
Really,
now that's kind of all I want.
Yeah, really, really funny. But I like him. I mean, I really like him. And if he's just going to come out and, you know, this, I like the song. I just, yeah, I dig No Way Jose. Sorry, I know there's probably a lot of people that don't like it, but
oh, I adore him. Honestly, one of the worst things about No Way Jose is when his song is in your head and you're like at work and you can't just dance to it.
Indeed,
it's, you know, like, it's just so catchy, and I think he's great, and I love the way that he incorporates the dance into his offense. He is No Way Jose the whole time, right? Yeah. And that's something that I feel like No Way Jose is more committed than Adam Rose was, too.
Yeah, me too.
Adam Rose looked a little uncomfortable at first. He was definitely playing the part, yeah. And I think he got a little bit more comfortable with the whole party thing, but then he stopped having party in his offense, too. And if No Way Jose can, you know, continue getting better, his wrestling wasn't like the greatest, but it wasn't bad by any means. He didn't look as shabby as some people.
No.
So,
But you know what? Remember, it's still developmental. So he's got some
development. And he's developing.
But yeah, one of the things I've always thought about the comedy gimmicks is you need to commit. I always said, Fandango, I can tell that you cannot dance. You had months off. Why were you not taking lessons and stuff, you know, when the music stopped and the bell rang, he might as well have been
Johnny Curtis.
But when the music stops and the bell rings, this guy is still No Way Jose, and I think the commitment to the gimmick often serves guys well. So I've got hopes that this could be quite fun. It's gonna be a fun ride. It might not be a long ride, but I think it'll be a fun one.
I think it will be too. And you know, if he gets better and better and better, who knows?
Exactly.
It could be a lot of fun. But I think that's NXT this week.
Wait. Jose.
Jose. No. Jose.
This is, yeah, that is NXT this week, and that is Inside the Ropes for this Monday. I thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. Sandra, any final words for the ITR masses?
We didn't have time to cover it, but watch Lucha Underground. It's so, so good.
It is. We will do some kind of show about Lucha Underground, because I'm a few episodes behind because I'm just so busy. So I'm kind of like, oh, I don't want anyone. I can't really podcast with Sandra about it because I'm not up to date with it, with her. But hopefully, maybe like at some point, we'll do some kind of season recap, even though we have to talk for like hours about it. We'll do something.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, but check out the No Mas match with Sexy Star and Mariposa, because it is intense, and Sexy Star finally kind of gets her comeuppance for a season-long arc, and it's amazing. Well, it's awesome to be invested in a character and then see them win and also get an ancient Aztec medallion out of the deal. I don't know. I just really love that show.
That's a great show. Yeah, and we know a lot of people that listen to us watch, so we want to do something about it near future. So thank you everybody for listening. Send your best wishes to our recovering Kenneth, nurturing his ill health with a copy of WWE Kids magazine, which is not even a lie, that is actually a thing.
That is true.
And we'll be back later in the week for another Inside the Ropes.